From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 145 years ago when three local religious organizations came together to offer an interfaith service. Leaders at First Universalist Church, First Unitarian Church, and Temple Brith Kodesh sought to bring together people from different faiths, celebrating the Thanksgiving season and expressing gratitude for blessings received throughout the year. That Thanksgiving service became a long-standing tradition that continues, and it will happen again this week. Organizers say it's the longest-running interfaith Thanksgiving service in the country. They also say 2019 is an especially pertinent time to find common ground and understanding. Looking ahead to 2020, they have chosen the following theme: sowing the seeds for a peaceful election year. And it's going to be a long election year. Their goal is to discuss the power of interfaith partnerships, especially during divisive times, even politically divisive times. This hour, we preview that service. We'll discuss the role of interfaith conversations and gatherings in bridging divides. Our guests represent different faith-based groups, and we'd like to welcome them now. Reverend Lane Campbell is minister at First Universalist Church of Rochester. Welcome. Nice to have you.
Thank you so much for having me here.
The Muslim chaplain at RIT, representing the Islamic Center of Rochester, is Abdur Rauf Bawani. Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Deacon Brian McNulty from St. Monica Roman Catholic Church. Deacon, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having us.
And Rabbi Peter Stein from Temple Brith Kodesh. Rabbi, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Evan.
It is a Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, 11 a.m. service at the First Universalist Church. That's at 150 South Clinton. Do I have that right, Reverend?
Yes, you sure do. At 150 South Clinton. And we are a congregation that has a limited parking lot. So I also just want to let folks know that there will be some free parking at the Washington Square Garage that's at the corner of Clinton and Woodbury streets right there. So folks will be able to easily access us.
And Deacon McNulty is going to be preaching unity and diversity and peace, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But first, Rabbi Stein, you've been digging through some history, and as I mentioned off the top, we have a long history with this, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about some of the texture you found in looking for our history.
Yeah, thanks so much, Evan. Yeah, it really is a fascinating history. The very first of these services actually took place in 1871, and that was a service between Temple Brith Kodesh and the First Unitarian Church, which was inspired by the friendship between Rabbi Landsberg of the Temple and Susan B. Anthony, who was active at the church. That service didn't continue, but then 3 years later, in 1874, the Temple, the Unitarian Church, and First Universalist Church came together to create what they called the Union Thanksgiving Service, the Union Thanksgiving Service. And it was really driven by the idea that by coming together in unity, we could have an impact on the community, that justice was at the core of that service, especially the dialogue between Rabbi Landsberg and Susan B. Anthony. I was reading some things that brought a smile to my face. She was known to read Rabbi Landsberg's sermon titles ahead of time and call him up and urge him to include certain topics about equality.
I love that thing. That remarkable history. And as far as we can tell, not apocryphal, right? I mean, this is the real deal.
It is the real deal. It's been continuing in that way. There are many communities that come together in the spirit of unity and togetherness. But I think for us in Rochester, with that incredible justice history, there's a real power in what it means to be in one place at one time, hearing important messages preached and prayers, resolutions and proclamations and so on.
Rabbi, given that history and thinking about the themes that were expressed, even going back decades and well over a century, I'm wondering how you feel about this concern that people tend to have, maybe me included, that everything feels as divisive as ever. At any fixed moment in time, it might feel the most extreme or the most polarized or the most divided. And I think there are many reasons to be deeply concerned, and I think those are valid concerns. But I also wonder if there are lessons in history that you think ought to remind us that we have been at least through similar ordeals before.
I think it's an important question. And I think about the history back to the 1870s. This was really just a few years after the terrible divide of the Civil War. This was still during a time of rebuilding and creating new realities and new relationships. The service has continued through world wars. It's continued through the civil rights movement. It's continued through other moments where we really stared in the face of a challenge and said that if we come together and learn from one another and celebrate not just being together, but celebrate our differences and our uniqueness and the beauty of our different faith traditions, that to me can really have an impact on the community.
So the theme that Deacon McNulty is preaching is unity and diversity in peace. Can you give me a little preview on that?
Well, if you look at the population of Rochester from the time when the rabbi was talking at the very beginning, Rochester has a lot different look to it now than it did then in terms of cultures, people, races, religions. The diversity of the whole city has, and the area has grown so immensely fast. And yet we still have that time when we get together and say, we can sit down together in peace. Maybe only for an hour or 2 hours, but we can do it. And how do we teach it to ourselves and teach it to our children that we can do this better and more often than just 1 hour for one day once a year? How do we carry this over into our daily lives? Peace is not just a five-letter word. It is a whole concept of how we behave each and every day of our life. Can we go through the service and get out of the parking lot without using our horn in anger? That's peaceful. Can we really walk a mile in another person's shoes? That sense that we can have empathy with the others. Do we have activism in our life to live a peaceful life and make sure that the cultures that are coming out of government, of institutions, promote a peaceful society and a just and equitable society where all are given the equal chance? That great statement of, you know, no peace, no justice. No justice, no peace. That, I think, are the basis of what we're trying to promote, to encourage, to remember, and to teach to our children going down to the next generations. So this continues for another 150 years.
Well, and Reverend Campbell, speaking of teach what we teach to children, tomorrow on this program we're going to talk to one of our colleagues, Noel Evans, who has been, among other things and many other projects, trying to understand how schools teach Thanksgiving. And, you know, I've got a 7.5-year-old, and I'm always curious to know, what are they telling you about, you know, what happened at, you know, Thanksgiving? And there's a lot of sort of myth and sort of fairy tale. I'm very honestly very uncomfortable with that, because I think there is a risk here. The risk being that, number one, we ignore the painful parts of history. And number two, we think, well, once a year you can sit down with people who are different. And wasn't that nice that the Pilgrims and the Indians did that when, again, first of all, the reality isn't nearly as rosy. And second of all, once a year is not enough. And I know you're trying to sow the seeds for more. I mean, generally speaking, are you concerned about the way kids are taught about sort of the Thanksgiving myth?
Yeah, I'm really grateful that you asked me this question, Evan, because I actually was going back and looking through some photos of me from my own childhood and found photos from that fateful day in my first grade class when folks actually came to school dressed up as Pilgrims and Native Americans. And my mother had put me in like braids and this, you know, headband with a paper made headband and a vest. And I was just looking at this picture, like horrified, you know? In our congregation, we had a workshop a couple of weeks ago that came with a statewide Universalist convention about the doctrine of discovery and sort of what has happened in our country around colonization and this, you know, this genocide of Native peoples and Indigenous peoples here. I am very concerned with what children are being taught. And I'm also, you know, very concerned with how we as adults address Thanksgiving in an ethical way. And so for us, what we started with, and I would just say this is really a first step and would love to see us go deeper around this topic in this service. For us, this led us to do some research at First Universalist Church around, you know, who were the American Indians, the indigenous folks that lived here, and how do we connect with that community? And also, how do we own that these are the lands upon which our church, our beautiful historic building, was built. And so a couple of my lay leaders went through and contacted a local American Indian Center and found out that we are on Haudenosaunee land, and we will actually be owning that at the top of this service as a part of my words of welcome. And you know, my hope is that we can continue to be in good relationship around that particular issue. I think it's really important. And I am very concerned about what our kids are being taught. And I hope that our religious communities can also be places to teach something different to our kids.
Well, Abdul Rauf Bawani from the Islamic Center of Rochester, what are you hoping is the end result? When we talk 1 year from now and the election is over and we're ready for another Thanksgiving, and we look back to what was started this week with this idea of sowing the seeds for a peaceful election. Is that realistic? What do you hope will be the fruit of the next year?
To piggyback on what Deacon has said, that if we do this all for the sake of peace, P-E-A-C-E, five-letter word, that's what he mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. If we don't go that way, then it would be another five-letter word, P-I-E-C-E. So we have to be very careful about that also, and it will divide us into pieces. Post 9/11, when I visited, I went into the Islamic Center of Rochester, and I was shocked to see whole of the Islamic Center was having piles and piles of cards, these cards of wishing us that we are supporting you, we are for you. And then on top of that, we have bouquets. And when I used to watch those bouquets, I could see many flowers in those bouquets. So I said, this is what diversity is. This is what this Rochester is. And very welcoming city, welcoming place. And our patriarch, Dr. Shafiq's work in towards the direction of this interfaith, that paid off post 9/11, and now we don't have to be afraid of anything. There are, you know, support group there. And post this election also, I vision this and I see that our future is very, very bright, like a bright sunshine today I see. Rarely we see overcasted sky of Rochester, but I'm glad that we have lots and lots of sunshine to see because of this act and this work we are doing.
Well, and speaking of what comes out of it, I want to make sure you know what happens with the free will offering. Deacon, can you explain what the free will offering is on Thursday?
Yes, it's taken up every year and given to some usually local group that is working with the same kind of ends in mind as the service. So this year it's Rise Up Rochester, which is a very active group in educating for nonviolence and to support and help people who are victims of violence in the community, especially the children who are living with times of gun violence and abusive violence in a home and having to live a life within that constant fear and still try to go to school and learn and have a normal daily life of peace and harmony, which they often don't find around their home or even in their schools. So Rise Up Rochester is working to try and build support systems, activism for talking about the issues, doing training with the kids and with parents to help promote a peaceful society in a very unpeaceful place for many of these kids.
Are you hopeful that we can have 12 months of a peaceful election season?
Am I hopeful? Yes. Am I cynical? Yes. Am I trying to be realistic? All the parties have to come together and agree we will respect each other equally. And if not every party buys into that or promises to do that, it'll be very difficult to achieve what you're asking.
Well, actually, Deacon, I would like you, if you could, define and differentiate from me the difference between cynicism and realism. And I ask that honestly because I had a conversation with one of my closest friends from childhood who was always sort of a cynical, smartest guy in the room, a good-hearted guy, but, you know, sort of a cynical guy. And he told me in early adulthood, he said, I wish I had not been so deeply cynical, that cynicism is corrosive. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a profound thing to hear from a friend who is pretty self-aware about it, but we all can be cynical. In this context, I don't know that you're being cynical. I hear you being realistic about what you see. Well, how do you differentiate between cynicism and realism?
Well, for me, I find cynicism is being not trustful. Realists can be trustful, but a cynic rarely is. That no matter what I say or no matter what I do, it will make no difference because it's out of my hands. It's beyond what I can control or do. And so I can make fun of it, or I can be rude, or I can say things that are just judgmental. A realist will say, that's the way the world works. And now we try and find a way around that kind of hard, real fact. I know that not every person who's going to be coming into this election cycle will be respectful, kind, finding places of common ground, or not looking for divisive rhetoric. That's a realist.
Do you find yourself resisting cynicism?
Oh, yes, all the time.
And maybe harder to do. Yeah. Rabbi, for you, what does a peaceful election season look like realistically?
So I think there's something important for me, which is that envisioning a peaceful year, working towards a peaceful year, peaceful is not passive. Peaceful can often be very loud and often abrasive, and peaceful ideally is filled with passion and is filled with vigor, and we are going to be asking over these next 12 months really very significant fundamental questions about our country, and that's a very hard thing to do, and that involves wrestling and struggling and doing it in such a way, hopefully, that we come out better and stronger on the other side. I actually, just to add one more historical note in that spirit, one of the early Thanksgiving services featured Susan B. Anthony herself as the speaker. And she chose as the theme, the unrest of our times, a cause for thankfulness. So she saw unrest, she saw struggle and wrestling and things that we might say are the opposite of peacefulness, but she saw it as something to be thankful for because in her mind, and she goes on to say this, that's what causes progress. So we want an election year that is peaceful, that leads us to make progress, that leads us to a better place and a stronger place for this country. This is ultimately a year of extraordinary patriotism, and in the purest sense of that term, but that's not easy, and that's not idle, and that's not passive.
Let me ask all of you then, and Abdurrauf, I'll start with you. We'll go around the table. What is dividing us the most? What concerns you the most right now?
For me, the basic thing is thankfulness. The more we are thankful, the more we are appreciative, the more we are tolerant, then the more we are united. This is the key, and that is what Islam advocates. In fact, the definition of Islam, one of the definitions is peace. If we don't go that route, peace and thankfulness, then definitely we will be divided. I would say that hold to the rope of peacefulness and thankfulness, and we will be fine even before election, after election, and many more elections, and be thankful what we have. We have so many things, that when you look towards those who are not having all those things, then you become more thankful. This is the only way that how you can achieve this thankfulness and peace, by virtue of seeing those who are deprived of what we have.
Okay, Reverend?
So you asked what's dividing us,
yeah,
right, the most. And some of what I'm seeing, you know, I feel like empire is dividing us right now. I feel like oppressive systems are dividing us, and the fears that we live in, being caught up in those oppressive systems and being caught up in this in empire right now. And I think also, you know, what a major factor of that to me is, in the midst of fears and in the midst of our fears, we're not listening to each other. We're letting the powers that be kind of have the last word or dictate what our reactions are, and we're really not able to listen to each other right now. And I think some of that comes from a power imbalance and from, different levels of oppression and different levels of discrimination that many folks are experiencing right now. And listening to one another across difference and honestly acknowledging what the power imbalances are is, I think, a huge key in moving forward and getting deeper into listening to one another. I think right now, a lot of the dialogue that's happening currently around different political issues is happening in a place where people are writing to one another. They're not talking to one another. And in doing that, I can dismiss you very easily.
Or maybe writing at one another.
Oh, hey, yeah. Or talking at one another, too, even. And not really being open to, you know, where can my awareness expand? Where can I change? Where can I shift? And where can I learn more about this? You know, empire is hurting us all. It's hurting all of us, even those of us who experience some of the highest levels of privilege. It's hurting all of us.
Rabbi, where do you see us most divided right now?
So I would build on some of what Reverend Campbell said. I think it's two things. Number one is we insulate ourselves and surround ourselves only with people of like mind and like identity and like perspective, that we've really distanced ourselves in many, many ways from people who have a different point of view. And then along with that, when we have the chance to be with people who have some difference to bring out, we're losing the skill and the ability and the willingness to listen. And so either we're surrounding ourselves and living in a bubble, or if we somehow make our way out of the bubble, we don't quite know how to cope with those who have a different opinion. And when we go through something like an election cycle, it's just the total lack of ability to understand somebody who might want to pull a different lever in that ballot box, as opposed to saying we're all listening to our hearts and minds and listening to one another and may cast different votes, but ultimately we're unified at the end of the day.
Deacon, where do you think we're most divided?
Well, like many of people around the table, I'm also very interested in history, especially the history of the United States. And one of the strongest points that built us as a nation was the ability for different sides to compromise, to be able to find a way to solve a problem without just condemning the other. Washington, D.C. is where it is because of a compromise. Now, there are some other not so good compromises, like with the admission of slave states, free states, not quite so good. But it was an attempt to compromise so that we could listen together and live together and continue this experiment in democracy together. That at the end of the day, as Rabbi is saying, we may have different voting. We vote our conscience, but we can respect the other person for what they represent and what they are voting for. Because it's important that we talk to each other, listen to each other, and not talk at each other and just condemn each other out of hand. This whole year has not been anything about compromise in our national government. It has been dichotomy, division, and not listening or trying to find a peaceful solution to what's going on in our nation.
Well, Reverend Campbell, on the subject of you know, the concern about not listening to people who might be different. You know, probably fair to say that represented in a lot of the interfaith conversations I see in Rochester, at least among Christian denominations, are more politically progressive Christians, maybe left-leaning Christians. For years, we heard about the power of the religious right. There is a religious left, and there's probably people identifying all kinds of different parts of the political spectrum. But what about denominations that may say, look, our chief motivation is the restoration of a ban on abortion? What about denominations that vote by the tens of millions for the current president and say that he's chosen by God? If they want to be part of these interfaith conversations, can they?
I think so. I think yes. You know, ultimately, yes, because we're coming together around issues of shared interest and coming together around issues of faith. And I would not question someone's faith based on how they vote. And I would hope that other people would extend me the same courtesy. That's part of this peaceful election year piece. We can't ignore the role that the church has played in current elections. And we also for us all as religious bodies, you know, there are things that we can come together around. And I would say that for me, I'll be honest with you and have a confessional moment on this radio show right now. The first time that I heard that we were going to do this service, I was like, oh man, I gotta work on Thanksgiving. And yet, because this is my second year doing this, and yet, I have to tell you that being up on that stage last year, we were at First Baptist Church last year, I came into it with a bit of skepticism, and I sat there on the stage and I felt incredibly hopeful. I felt the kind of hope that it really filled my spirit and sent me on my way for the rest of the day, just to see people from so many different perspectives coming together, and just to see so many folks in the community too who are coming together. And it is my hope that we can always do work across faith lines, and maybe we don't come together on every single issue, you know, around issues of abortion, issues of LGBTQIA inclusion. These are issues that it's oftentimes hard for faith communities to come together around, but are there issues of like deeper justice that we can come together around? Racial reconciliation? I mean, can we come together around, you know, women's rights, voting rights? Voting rights are huge, no matter what perspective you come from. So, it's my hope that we can always work together.
Hmm. And, you know, Rabbi, you kind of talked about a similar issue of the bubbles that we have. Sometimes, especially when we're thinking about justice and progress, it is natural to say, all right, well, let's put together this little coalition. And, hey, here's an interfaith coalition. And we have people from the Islamic faith and the Jewish faith and different Christian denominations and other groups represented. But politically, if everyone at the table is sort of hoping for the same outcome, is it diverse enough? Do you want more diversity of thought? Should there be lines that we draw? Do we say, look, we want the diversity of thought, but when people are suffering actual oppression, we do have to be exclusionary at certain points or not? How do we draw those lines?
So I think you're touching on something very important. And when I think of the nuance of what does it mean to be a faith leader, what does it mean to be in a faith coalition, there's two aspects for me as a rabbi, and I think for many of us, which is, on the one hand, we want to build up and strengthen our faith community. On the other hand, there are important teachings in each of our faith traditions that call us to go outside of our community and into the broader community, to be a leader not only within the synagogue or the mosque or the church, but to be a leader within our city and our country. And it's that motivation that really brings us to these kinds of conversations. And yes, when we're honest with ourselves, most of our interfaith coalitions are not diverse enough. They are not diverse enough by various measures, whether it's racial diversity or economic diversity. Political diversity would be another piece of that. And I think that's the challenge for us, is that to use this service, hopefully as a jumping off point, to say we have goals for our city, we have goals for our country, and we're not going to accomplish those goals if we reinforce some of the homogeneous nature of our relationships and our lives. So I think you're touching on something very important, and it's an open possibility what's going to come next. What's interesting to me, when we look at this Union Thanksgiving service, this interfaith service, there's no overarching body. There's no board. It is just a group of people who have found each other year after year, which means it's open and open to different perspectives and different points of view. And hopefully by focusing on this great national aspiration for 2020, we will draw on people with differences.
Well, as we talk about the Interfaith Thanksgiving Day service, a reminder, it is on Thanksgiving Day, Thursday, 11 a.m. at the First Universalist Church of Rochester. That's at 150 South Clinton Avenue. They would love to see you there. But as Reverend Campbell mentioned, just something to keep in mind one more time about how to get there in the parking, what you want people to know if they're going to attend.
Sure, yeah. We have some free parking that is available right at the corner of Clinton and Woodbury. That is a block away, actually really half a block away from where our church is at Clinton and Court. So please feel free to park over there or find street parking on Thanksgiving Day. We have a very small urban parking lot. And so, you know, and we want to try and make room for as many folks to come as possible. We have a large capacity in our sanctuary and would welcome as many folks to come.
And before our break, I just want to ask Reverend Campbell and mm-hmm. Deacon McNulty to comment on one other thing that I've seen sort of, for some reason, it's hard to always predict what goes viral at certain times and why, but there is a clip that I've seen shared dozens of times in the last 5 days or so. I admit, having weighed in myself, and I think I read on social media that I personally found it vile, but it was a clip of a megachurch pastor named Joel Osteen, who's talking about the prosperity gospel. Now, he has millions of fans and people around the country who follow his message, if not attending his services in person. Here's what he said about being poor. Quote, to show God that you're really humble when you're poor, broke, and defeated, well, all that proves is that you're poor, broke, and defeated. It doesn't bring any honor to God. If I brought my two children up on the platform today and their clothes were all raggedy, worn out, holes in their shoes, hair not combed, you would look at me and think, what kind of father is he? It would be a poor reflection on me. Listen, when you look good, you dress good, you live in a nice place, you excel in your career, you're generous with others, that brings a smile to God's face. It brings him pleasure to prosper you. End quote. My honest view was, I never met Jesus in person, and I don't know if he was the Son of God, but I do know that the teachings don't seem to be reflected there. But there are lots of Christians who do think that. What would Reverend Campbell? Let me start with you. If you were, you know, had a chance to talk to Pastor Osteen after you heard that, mm-hmm. you know, and he says, "Hey, look, I want to be part of your interfaith group. Let's talk about this. I want to spread the prosperity gospel." What I just said, read there. What comes to mind for you?
What comes to mind for me is the scriptural passage about the woman with two pennies, right? And so, and you know, the two pennies to rub together, and she donates those to the church and to the cause. And I just juxtapose that comment with hearing an amazing sermon about that particular scripture passage at a church for all peoples where I used to live in Columbus, Ohio, and sitting in a room that was very mixed class. I mean, this is in a neighborhood that's very affluent with quite a few homeless and houseless folks all in the same room worshiping together. When I think about that piece, I get concerned for ways that we are pushing away folks who are already isolated, especially serving a congregation that is in downtown Rochester and having, you know, St. Joseph's House of Hospitality just low two blocks away and seeing our neighbors come by daily. We do a healthy snacks ministry at our congregation. Our neighbors coming by daily and ways that folks are so often isolated, shamed, cast aside in our communities for not looking a certain way or mm-hmm. appearing a certain way. One of the ways I feel like churches and congregations and religious communities can really fail people is when we're asking folks to come appearing a certain way or in a certain kind of class mindset or with a certain look. And so I would wonder where that's scripturally founded for Joel Osteen, and I'd wonder where he found the scripture that supports that message.
Yeah, so. You know, Deacon, the reason I bring it up is I'm thinking about what Rabbi Stein said about what peace means, and it doesn't always mean just, you know, no challenging each other. I mean, peace can be activist. You know, there's a lot of different forms of peace. And there can also be damage done to others if you are telling them that, you know, if you don't have something to launder your clothing at home and you're a single parent and you're working multiple jobs and your child goes to school with a rip in the clothing or clothes that don't happen to be as clean as you'd like them to be, I think about the damage done if someone's telling you that's not what God wants. You're not honoring God. I mean, that's a powerful thing to say, isn't it?
Oh, I think so, too. It doesn't seem to match with the way I've experienced what we call revelation of who the divine is in my life. I've met lots and lots of people who are broken, ragged, sick to death, literally, who are very much the presence of God to me. They have brought to my life the essence of who a loving creator is. They don't have two pennies at all. They have nothing because they have understand the revelation of the divine for the good of humanity, for the good of this world. When we read the creation stories, and rabbis a lot more up on them than I do, when God creates, he says, it's good. It's very good. So to turn around and say, well, just because you don't have the right sneakers or you have a torn jacket, you're not good, doesn't match up with the scripture's image of the divine that I've been taught or that I have experienced. That those people, no matter what they look like or smell like or taste like, they are divinely loved with no exception. It matters not. At St. Monica, we're handing out buttons that say, God loves everyone, no exceptions. And I think we should live that way. And that's if we can find some ways of promoting that with all people of faith, of regardless of its background. I don't know if anybody in Islam would argue with that.
Any argument there, Abdul-Rauf?
No. You know, in fact, you know what you said, I agree with that, and that is what I see. It is not the ragged clothes or how you appear. It is what you are behind. What kind of soul is behind. That is what matters to God and how helpful you are. It is said in the tradition of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that a day when the sun dawn on you and there is a charity for each and every joints that you have, and 360 joints you have. There is a charity, and this charity is not a mandatory or obligatory, it is supererogatory charity, that you have to make difference in somebody's life. That is what it counts to God. God sees that whoever do good to the creation, the one in the heaven does good to him. That is the message that God sends us through all this good work, that we do it together.
Together. Evan, this gives an example of, I've been working in interfaith matters for 40 years now. One thing I learned early on was it's a three-legged stool: prayer, dialogue, and service. Those three things go together, and this is an example of dialogue. Right, it was what's happening right now. You're listening to it right now. This is a dialogue from four different perspectives of creation. And we don't necessarily all hold the exact same thing, but we can talk about it. And we can do on Thursday, we will be in one room together to give thanks to the divine together. We pray together. We have the Muslim call to worship. We will sound the shofar. We will have prayer and readings of sacred scriptures from different traditions. Prayer. And we can only start to imagine the number of services that we do cooperatively for the people of this neighborhood and the county all around. So we're doing it. But when you get tired and we're weary in the middle of a week, you hear the news again, it's hard to see where it's affecting us right now. But it's happening.
Well, after our only break of the hour, I want to welcome a phone call from the president of the Islamic Center of Rochester, who's on the line with us. So President Javed is with us. So let's get that only break of the hour. We're talking about the Interfaith Thanksgiving Day service. It's coming your way on Thursday at 11 a.m. It's at the First Universalist Church. And as Rabbi Peter Stein has been telling us, it is a long history with tremendous roots in Rochester. It goes back about 145 years and includes even names like Susan B. Anthony. So a tremendous history continued once again this year. Rabbi Stein from Temple Beth Kodesh is here. Abdul-Rauf Bawani from the Islamic Center of Rochester. Deacon Brian McNulty from St. Monica Roman Catholic Church. And Reverend Lane Campbell, the minister of First Universalist Church of Rochester. We're right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg is surging in polling for early primary states. We'll talk about his candidacy and why the left flank of the progressive base can be suspicious of him. In our second hour, a conversation about how we teach Thanksgiving in schools, myth versus reality. It's Wednesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's get a phone call from Tabassum Javed, who is the president of the Islamic Center of Rochester. Welcome, President. How are you?
Good. Good afternoon, all interfaith brothers and sisters. It's such a pleasure to see that this work is being moved forward, you know, at the pace that I would like it to be always. As I have stated earlier, it's a mission for me, and I know how much good comes out of it. It just happens to be that I'll be traveling out of the country and won't be attending, you know, this ceremony, but I attended it twice before, and spiritually very uplifting, and such a soothing balm, you know, in terms of how it heals the differences and brings us all together. And Evan, I think you asked Rauf as to what is concerning him, and he touched on another topic but didn't mention that, and I do want to mention that, that what concerns me as a Muslim and as an immigrant is that we have lost a certain degree of civility that was so much prevalent in our country. And I sense it in the statistics, you know, the FBI statistics about the anti-Semitic events, about the anti-Muslim events, about the hijabs being yanked out of people who are standing in a line for, you know, for the Starbucks line and events like that. So I see that, and that concerns me. And efforts like these, which are the interfaith efforts, are something that, as I said, is a soothing balm, is something that is going to heal this division and this interruption. I really find it that it's an interruption. Things were coming along, and then somehow the pot was stirred, and it interrupted the normal, natural flow of humanity and interpersonal relations, you know, and that is my concern.
So can I ask you, President Javed, I think that's an interesting observation on whether the pot was stirred, so to speak, I guess I'll pose the question this way. I've talked to a number of school principals and superintendents who tell me that since the 2016 election, they have seen more aggressive student-to-student interaction, sometimes bullying, sometimes what might border on bullying. And yes, they're nervous about some of the modeling we're seeing on the national level for that, some of the impact. But there are two schools of thought here. There's one that says, well, what's happened is that we have revealed what's been under the surface and allowed that to come to the surface so we can deal with it. It's always been there. And there's another that says, well, we have turned sort of back, and that we've kind of turned the boat in a different direction, and we've kind of gone in a way that makes more people uncomfortable. Do you feel like, President Javed, we have revealed who we are as a people more? Or is it that we've kind of turned in a different direction that you think is temporary?
I think we have turned into a direction that is temporary, because I think I still believe there's so much goodness. You know, when I see people and interact with that, when I'm on the panels in certain areas in the colleges where people, you know, where our reverends, where they're, you know, clergy people, people of other denominations, you know, I was not too long ago in one of the churches speaking about Islam, and one of the things that I felt from all of the people over there, they had concern about me. I mean, it's like such a beautiful thing to think that this is a human-to-human concern. They don't know me from Adam, and yet they had this concern. They said, they asked me again and again, is your family safe when they are traveling, you know, or when they stop at the throughway stop? You know, are your family members who are wearing hijab, are they safe? Do they feel safe? I mean, these conversations were not part of a normal, you know, conversations between people, and yet that tells you that there was so much goodness in these people, inherent goodness, that they feel the concern for the other, you know, others, so to speak, you know, like the people who are visibly going to be identified as Muslims, and they have concern about them, genuine concern, because they think that what America was, let's say, 5 years ago, is not at the same place. Mm. It's a different place.
Mm. Before I let you go, then, President Javed, do you find yourself an optimist or a cynic?
I do find myself an optimist, because I know there is so much goodness that it will reveal itself in the right way at the right time, and it will supersede the negative forces that are out there, and we will become the model that we are and were, you know, and I'm hoping for that, absolutely.
Nice to hear from you as always, and I look forward to more conversations with you before the end of this year and next year as well. Thank you very much.
Take care. All the best to you, and my thanks to all the people who are working on this interfaith endeavor. God bless you.
President Tabassum Javed, the president of the Islamic Center of Rochester. Deacon McNulty, does that make you more of an optimist and less of a cynic there?
Oh, sure. Anybody who has a positive attitude is always helpful.
Tabassum is, he radiates optimism. So, so as we get ready to close the hour, I'd like our guests just kind of offer some brief final thoughts as you look ahead to Thursday, but also, again, not just one day, for a full year. You know, what is it now that does give you hope? We've spent a lot of time talking about what divides us. What is giving you hope?
That we do it at all. That's, we're trying. There is no permanent answer. This is an ongoing quest to understand and to work with each other for the betterment of the entire community. And yes, I'm optimistic. I think we can do it. We've done it better in the past, and we'll probably do it better in the future. But I don't think, no matter how dark it gets, it's not midnight. We're at the dawn. We always have potential to do better.
Rabbi Stein, what gives you optimism?
Thanks. And my thought is actually in part prompted by listening to Tabassum when he called in. And that is, in recent years, so many of the biggest interfaith gatherings in Rochester have been in response to a tragedy, mm-hmm. an act of violence or otherwise. And to me, what is so powerful and what is important about carrying on this interfaith Thanksgiving service is we're doing it in a planned way with an optimistic belief that we can build a closer and a stronger and a more peaceful community. We can go into this year of 2020 and make it a year that makes our city and our country stronger. So that's my hope, is that we will be together on Thursday and we'll be together again and again throughout the year, not responding or reacting or protesting to something terrible that's happened, but rather building one goodness upon another over the course of the year.
Okay. Reverend Campbell, what gives you the optimism?
I think what gives me the optimism at this point in my life is the people. I mean, the people of Rochester right now are giving me a lot of hope. Seeing folks come together around various justice struggles in our community, seeing folks come together for hard conversations, seeing folks coming together to continue to advocate on behalf of folks who are being systemically oppressed. I feel like that piece and the fact that this service has its roots in a justice struggle and the service and that those roots have borne the fruit of this year and will continue to bear fruit in years to come in the people.
And Abdurrauf Thawani.
I have to say, when I see, because of this interfaith work that's going on in the Rochester and even all over America, that's what I see. I see the silver lining in the dark cloud because of this interfaith work. And I see that we have started appreciating each other. When I started this interfaith work and joining this interfaith work, once I said in one of the classes, I said that we have to tolerate each other. And right there and then, at that time, I was giving this class with Rabbi Alan Katz. And he said that, I think we have to rise a degree above that, not tolerating, but accepting each other. That is what taught me a lesson, and that is what I see when I open my eyes around me. I see that now we have started accepting each other as the creation of the God, because God says in Quran that I have created you in different tribes and nations, not to despise each other, but to love each other and know each other. So that is where this interfaith gatherings and interfaith work brings us around. Thank you.
11 o'clock, Thursday morning, Thanksgiving Day at the First Universalist Church in Rochester. Have a lovely service. Thank you all.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Evan.
Before we close, I don't do this very often, but I want to offer my thoughts on the passing of a member of the WXXI family. Most of you never knew her, and I am sorry for that. She passed away this past weekend in a house fire, and so to say that we are shocked is an understatement. We are devastated. Her name was Sue, and our relationship with Sue exemplifies what we believe about membership and family and community. She loved WXXI, and occasionally she would call us during a pledge drive with a generous contribution. She loved doing that. It made her feel good. But we wanted something else. We wanted to get to know who she was. And it turns out she was a brilliant, hardworking woman who carried a lot of pain in her life. She recently lost her dad. It's been a difficult couple of years for her. She was shy, careful. And yet somehow we convinced her to get on an airplane and come to Spain last year with the WXXI Travel Club. It was the first time she'd gone overseas in 40 years. She was planning to join us again overseas at the trip next year. She walked with the pace of a woman in a hurry, but she was never in a hurry unless she was chasing her beloved dog. She took her time. She listened, kind of old school that way, you know? She basically talked less and listened more. And last week, she and I talked on the phone for about half an hour. Then we texted about a few things. She always asked about my son. She always signed her text messages with her name. I assured her, you don't need to do that. I know it's from you. But she did, and I loved that. And it's surreal to say that she is gone now. I could go all Mike and the Mechanics and say that the lesson is to tell people how you feel about them when they're still around to hear it. But I think we did a pretty decent job of that with Sue. We loved her. She was so much more than a WXXI member. She was a friend. And I've got a coffee date on my calendar for December 4th with her that will go unfilled. We're trying to get our head around that loss. But let me close with this. When we talk about member-supported public radio, we are talking about people like that. Relationships do not just go one way. Both sides have something to give, something to teach. And she helped remind us of the importance of our mission. So even though she is gone, we will continue with that effort. Goodbye, our friend. And thank you. I want to thank everyone involved with the program today. Sorry about that. Thanks to David Griffin for volunteering. Megan Mack is the producer. Rob Braden is the engineer of Connections. Sorry about that, everyone. But I had to get it off our chest. It's been a hard few days here. So thanks to all the members and everyone who supports this, not just this program, but everything we do here and supports our community in so many ways. That's what we mean when we say member-supported public radio. I do hope that you are surrounded by love wherever you are this afternoon, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.